Today is Shushan Purim, which means for those living in the walled cities, today is the day of Purim. For us in the diaspora, today is the day after Purim. So what happens, what is the spiritual progress, the spiritual development from Purim to the day after Purim? What happens on the day after? So if you look, if you observe a little bit about Purim, you'll see that it's very clearly a very loud, festive holiday, and it's a lot of noise and a lot of colors, a lot of imagery. According to the Arizal, the two rabbinic holidays, which is Hanukkah and Purim, corresponds to Netzach and Hoyd in the Sfirot. All the seven holidays correspond to different emotional Sfirot. Pesach is Chesed, and Rosh Hashanah is Gvura. So in terms of the lower Sfirot, which is Netzach and Hoyd, Netzach is outward expression, and Hoyd is humility, is a quieter expression. So Netzach is the Purim Yom Tov, Purim holiday, which is very much outward and expressive, external. And Hanukkah is a much more subtle, quiet holiday. That's a holiday that we celebrate with candles and lights, and it's much more quieter. The actual process, the way we're supposed to reach, is on Purim. There's a custom, perhaps even a mitzvah, to drink to a point where a person reaches a place of adad lo yada, a person reaches a point where they don't longer know. But if you look at the phrase, the way the Talmud describes the idea of drinking, it's a very interesting word, because it doesn't say a person should become a shikur, which would be a drunk, until they don't know the difference between a blessing and a curse, but it says lipsum. And the word lipsum, chay lipsumai, the root of that word is boysim, which is spices, incense. And I'll explain what this is. That chayva lipsum, that really a person should reach a point of the sense of smell. The sense of smell is reach. Reach is a sense of smell, right? The sense of smell is reach. Reach, also numeric value, in gematria, reach is resh yud ches. Resh is 200, yud ches is 18. 218 is the numeric value of the word. With the word itself is the numeric value of the word yudalad adar, the 14th of adar, which means that something is very much interconnected, the idea of the sense of smell, with adar. And on a very simple level, let's just talk about this. If the point is to get to a place where you drink, and drink is done, that's very loud and very boisterous, but ultimately you're supposed to reach a point where you no longer know. So how do you know when you reach that point that you no longer know the difference between the distinction, making a distinction between a blessing and a curse? So Maimonides, the Rambam, writes very simply, it's when you fall asleep. So you get tired and then you fall asleep. Now what happens is, it's a very different posture, it's also a very different consciousness when you're, let's say you are literally drinking and you're very happy and joyous and you're jumping around and all of a sudden you fall asleep, it's almost the opposite posture. So what is really the intention of Purim? Is the intention of Purim to reach the place where you're feeling the joy and you're jumping and you're happy and you're ecstatic? Or is really the point to reach a place where you're stop? Ad lo yada means that you should reach a point that you should transcend all awareness. And how do you transcend all awareness? When you get a point where it's very quiet. In fact, when you're sleeping, you're completely quiet. You're no longer talking, you're no longer screaming, you're no longer jumping around. So the peak, and that's what we'll have to understand the day after Purim, the peak of Purim is really to reach a point of silence. Let's try to understand this a little bit deeper. The idea of psamim, of reach, of a sense of smell. If we look also at the name Mordechai, which is the main figure in the Megillah story, right? So Mordechai, the word Mordechai is connected with the word Mardachia. The Talmud says a Mardachia is one of the incense that was brought in the altar in the temple. So Mordechai is connected with incense as well. And the same thing also Esther. Esther's name is really Hadassah. Hadassah is something that has a pleasant smell. Haman, even the evil character in the story. The Talmud asks, where is Haman rooted in the story of the Torah? Where do we find Haman's name? And it says, Amina Eitzazet Techelu, if you look back in the story of the Garden of Eden, it says, will you eat from this tree? Are you going to eat from this tree? And the word Hey Memnu, which spells the word Haman, appears in the Torah. So Esther, Mordechai, Haman are all traced back into the Garden of Eden. So what does that mean? If you look through the story in the Garden of Eden, in the story, you'll see that there's the Tree of Life, and then there's a tree of knowledge. The tree of knowledge is a place of distinctions where you're making distinctions. You're saying, this is a good and this is evil, this is an up and this is a down, this is a right, this is a wrong. That's the place of opposites, of duality. When Adam and Eve eat from the tree of knowledge, which eating represents, they internalize the tree of knowledge, meaning they also identify themselves more with the tree of knowledge than with the tree of life. So the way the Torah describes this event is that they saw that the fruit was nice, and they tasted the food, and they touched the food, and Adam heard, listened to what Chava had to say, and Chava listened to the snake. So all four out of the five senses are mentioned in the story. The sense of sight, the sense of hearing, the sense of taste, and the sense of touch. The only sense that's not mentioned in the Garden of Eden story is the sense of smell. And therefore, say that the sense of smell is also a more spiritual sense than all the other senses. All the other senses are more connected with the tree of knowledge, which is the tree of duality, and the sense of smell is more deeply connected with the tree of life. How do we see that? We see this very simply, even on a physical level. If, let's say, you had a very deep, very pronounced, very important experience when you were younger, let's say you were 10 years old, you were a certain place, and you heard a certain thing, you were in a certain thing, and you want to revisit that experience, or you want to go back to that place to recreate that experience, so you go back there. You'll find that when you go back there, and you go back to the same location, the same little house, same place, you can't really re-experience it that strongly. Sometimes you're just walking down the street, and it's random, you're not thinking about that place, and a smell comes back to you, that's something that you smelled in that location, and all of a sudden you're transplanted back into the place, even stronger than actually visualizing and seeing it. Why? Because the Kabbalistic reason for that is because the sense of smell is connected with the tree of life. The tree of life is one. The tree of knowledge is opposites. Opposites means that there's a yesterday, a today, and tomorrow, which is a creation of separation of time. The tree of life is where there is no separation of creation of time. So therefore, when you have the sense of smell, you're entering into the tree of life. In a deeper level, you're entering into more connected with the tree of life. And therefore, you can go to a place that's the past and the present, the future, all one. So even being here, you actually have a re-experiencing of your memory much stronger in the present. So the tree of life has to do with the sense of smell. We find this also in the Torah and other descriptions where, let's say, for example, where Isaac is going to bless his son, and his son is dressed up, Yaakov is dressed up like Esav. He touches him, he says, I feel one thing, but I'm smelling something else. I'm smelling you, it smells like paradise, which means that the concept of Gan Eden, of paradise, is connected with the sense of smell. In fact, when the prophet speaks about Messianic era, he says that a person, that Mashiach, the concept of Mashiach, will be Mareich V'Doin, that will be a person that will able to judge by the sense of smell, that somehow the sense of smell will be elevated, and that's connected. So you have this idea of a higher consciousness connected with the sense of smell. So what we have here is like this, that on one hand, Purim is very loud and very noisy, and then on the other hand, the point of Purim, the peak of Purim, is not Yada, is not awareness, and awareness is already where there's a sense of self. Let's go back into the garden again. What happens to Adam and Eve when they eat from the tree of knowledge? What's the first thing that they become aware of? They become aware of themselves. And because they become aware of themselves, they sense their separation. They sense their identity as their bodies. They sense that they're separate from each other. And therefore, they become ashamed of each other, and they put on garments. So the first experience that they have tasting from the tree of knowledge is self-awareness, that they become aware. It's much like a child, that a child, when they're very little, are living really in the tree of life reality. They're not self-aware. They're not aware if they're making a fool out of themselves, or they're saying the right thing or doing the right thing. They are who they are always. A person that becomes a little older is always constantly reflecting upon themselves. Are they doing the right thing? Are they saying the right thing? Are they look the right way? They're always self-conscious. And what separates us really from experiencing life is our self-conscious, is that we're constantly self-conscious. Because we're self-conscious, we can't participate in the place of the tree of life. The tree of life is where there is no self-conscious. I'm not saying that we have to live there at all times. That's not the point. But I'm saying if we're talking about Purim, the idea of Purim, and we'll go back to the idea of Amalek, which is the great arch enemy, and that's the embodiment of Haman, represents Amalek. What is Amalek really? Amalek is really this idea of self-awareness. And it's like the snake that creates self-awareness and the tree of knowledge, that the person is knowing, becomes aware, and is aware of self. Once a person is aware of self and aware of the situation that they are in, automatically they can't experience whatever they are. Let's say you're listening to music, for example, a very simple example, and you're aware that you're listening to the music, that you're not really appreciating music, or you're watching theater, or you're praying, or you're learning, whatever you're doing, if you're aware that you're experiencing it, then you're not fully experiencing it. Because the awareness, the das, actually causes a separation between us and the experience. The self-awareness, the awareness of self and the awareness that you are present in this experience separates you from the experience itself. So let's think about this in terms of Purim as well. If the whole idea of Purim is to get to a place of lo yada, a place of non-awareness, which is to get to a place where it's the tree of life, beyond the tree of knowledge, right? In Purim we say that a person should reach not knowing. What does it mean not knowing? You should go beyond the tree of knowing, Eitz Hadas, that's the tree of knowing, and reach a place that it's Eitz Chaim, the tree of life. And if the point is to get to the place of the tree of life where you're experiencing everything in the immediate, in the moment, without the self-awareness, mm-hmm. ultimately it's really about the silence then that comes after all the sound, because the sound is where you're present. The sound is where you're self-expressive. The sound is where maybe you're aware of yourself. It's that point where you stop becoming aware. And that's really the peak of the Purim experience, is really when you reach a place that it's already transcendent of that, of all the noise. And this is about this progress. So you think about Purim, sometimes you say, you know, Purim was a very successful Purim for you, it was a very joyous Purim, and then what? Like, okay, so you're left hanging, it's the day after Purim, so what happens now? In a way, really, the ultimate place of Purim is the day after, or the place that you're supposed to reach after you've reached it. In other words, you get to a place where you're stopping to reach for anything because you're there. And that's really the place where everything becomes holy, everything becomes a positive experience. You know, in Purim, you know, normally after a holiday, after Yom Tov, at the conclusion of the holiday, what we do is we do Havdalah, right? We do a separation between the holiday and between the sacred and the mundane, and you're making a separation. At Purim, we don't do that. Purim ends, and we don't make Havdalah, we don't make a separation. The simple interpretation is because it's only rabbinic, but the deeper interpretation why we don't do Havdalah is because Purim, the peak of Purim is to really transform our whole weekday, that there shouldn't be a separation. Yeah, we're meant to take the inspiration that we have from Purim and truly translate into our own lives without actually making any separation. Because by definition, separation is das. Separation is Eitz Hadas. That's what creates separation. If you look in the liturgy where we say Havdalah, where we say the passage of separation on Saturday night, on Matzah Shabbos, which part of the Amidah do we say it? We say it when we say Atachon Lanam Das. You have given us Das, awareness, and then we say, now let's create a separation between the sacred and the mundane, between the 7 days of the week and Shabbos, 6 days of the week and Shabbos. So Das is what creates Das. Awareness is what creates Havdalah, separation. It may Das Havdalah Menayin. If there's no Das, if there's no awareness, what's making distinctions, there's no separation. Let's turn it inside out and say, when there is no Havdalah, meaning when there is no separation, that means there is no das. And if there's no das, we're constantly just present. Because das is what creates a separation between us and something else. Because the awareness is what, das is awareness, self-awareness and awareness of what's going on, is what creates a separation from us and the experience. Now, ultimately, we have to understand that the point is not that we should become children again and live like, you know, infants and just, you know, walk around without clothes, because we're not self-aware. The ultimate experience is that we somehow have to learn how to integrate these two ideas And this is what the Arizal says. Eventually, we were supposed to eat from the tree of knowledge. Not that we were never supposed to eat from the tree of knowledge. We were supposed to eat from the tree of knowledge, but just not then. We were supposed to eat the tree of knowledge on Shabbos, not on Friday. Instead, we ate it too quickly, which means we were supposed to also have awareness, but our awareness has to come from a place of Shabbos, from a place of sacred, from a place of holy, and then we can have proper awareness. Mm-hmm. The problem is that we identify with awareness too strongly. In other words, Shabbos represents the tree of life. Weekday represents the tree of knowledge, the tree of opposites. We identify ourselves first with a das, and then we try to lose our das in order to be in a place of the tree of life. It should really work the other way around, which is that we should first identify ourselves with the tree of life. We should first be in a place of our being, and being very comfortable in our place of our being at all times. And then from that place, we should also use our awareness to make right distinctions and right choices. But we shouldn't come from the opposite direction, where we start off from life that we start off separate, and then we yearn for unity. We start off that we're separate from life, and then we seek to get closer to the place of the tree of life. It should really be the other way around. We should start life from a perception that it's a tree of life, and we're experiencing life, and we're part of life, and there's no separation between us and life. And from that perspective, we also have awareness to make the right choices in our life. And that's understanding the tree of knowledge through the tree of life. So Purim is really, it's a once-a-year experience. That's the letting go of all awareness, just allowing ourselves to be present in the experience, to have that reach, that sense of smell, to go back into the Garden of Eden, where it's before the tree of knowledge, before self-awareness, before we're aware that we're experiencing something, just to be in the experience. And then throughout the year, we have to unpack what we received on Purim in the place that we're actually making distinctions and making the right choices and doing the mitzvahs and doing the correct things that we have to be doing in our lives. So we're coming to a place, to the tree of knowledge, from the place of the tree of life. So really, the peak of Purim experience is really the day after Purim, like always. It's always the day after that you can know really if the effects are real. Okay, so I think we're going to try to...